On Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs. Morning, where's been going? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge B.J. Goldsmith, a high school student from my district, from Churchill High School, and he's, I believe, a regional debate finalist. And go ahead and stand up, B.J. Glad you could make it here, and we're happy to see you.
Welcome, B.J. Thanks for coming. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2160. And once again, Janet, please review it for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2160, you've seen a couple of times. This is the bill that was requested by the Insurance Division. It makes a number of changes to current law, but the changes are for the most part, changes that don't affect their current policies. They're just clarifications under current law. It clarifies that insurance companies may issue more than one class of insurance in a package insurance policy if the director finds that such a policy is in the best interest of the public. It clarifies that an insurance company may permit the holder of an individual annuity policy or a pure endowment policy to borrow on the policy. And the Dash 2 amendments clarify that if there's value left, that the policy will not be canceled. This change was made at the request of Representative Richardson. And the original bill deleted a requirement that DCBS publish an annual report of official transactions. This provision was deleted because most of the information is either available in the agency's budget, which is available to anyone, and or available online. The changes in the amendments make it clear that the report may still be published. There's a statute that we have copies of at your place or in the packet yesterday that says that any report that's required by law may be published now on the internet instead of publishing a hard copy. So that takes care of that issue. But the amendments still require the report and say that the director gives notice of the publication of the report to the office of the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, and co-chairs of the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, these Dash 2 amendments incorporate the Dash 1 amendments that were already adopted by the committee, and the Dash 2 amendments do have the blessing of Representative Richardson, and the Insurance Division is here if you have any questions or if they want to make any comments for the record on the amendments.
Anyone from the Insurance Division want to make you have any comments? Okay. No. Committee, entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2s. Representative Shields.
Mr. Chair, I make the amendment that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments into 2160.
Representative Shields moves we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2160. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, we will adopt the Dash 2s. Representative Shields.
I would move that we move House Bill 2160 with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Shields moves House Bill 2160 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Esterbrock.
Aye.
Representative
Gelman. Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kidd.
Excuse.
Representative
Thompson.
Aye.
Representative
Shields.
Aye.
Chair Brown. Aye. Motion carried.
Again.
Representative Holby, would you like to carry this bill again?
I'll carry it a little further this time, yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2091. And Janet, give me a review of the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2091 was introduced at the request of the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, and the bill transfers the review process for certain workers' compensation contested claims to the Workers' Compensation Board. The transfer applies to contested case hearings on matters other than those concerning a claim and which are currently handled through the Office of Administrative Hearings. Mr. Chair, the background's given in the staff measure summary, and you have the dash one amendments. The dash one amendments we just received yesterday afternoon, so we emailed, but they're at your place this morning as well. The amendments specify that an administrative law judge or the director will make the final determination of whether the record was sufficiently developed. The bill did not have that ability of both persons to make that determination. It gives longer time frames for a hearing and order on a revocation of a self-insured employer certification, and that's in Section 14. My staff measure summary includes the last sentence of the description of the proposed amendments did not make it into the amendments, and that may be a reason in testimony this bill may need to be held over for another day, because the amendment was going to give the Workers' Comp Board discretion to defer action instead of requiring the deferral of action on matters concerning a claim when there's a dual jurisdiction. Mr. Chair, right now there's dual jurisdiction for some of these cases, and that is maybe confusing, and this bill is kind of consolidates the hearings back to the Workers' Compensation Board. Mr. Chair, this bill has been through the Management Labor Advisory Committee, or MLAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. We have John Schultz. Mm-hmm. Can I have John Schultz, please, and Bruce Miller? Start with you, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. It's my pleasure to be here this morning, excuse me, to request the committee's support about HB 2091 and the proposed Dash 1 amendments. You've got my written testimony, and I don't intend to read it to you. I think you can look at it. I did want to mention a couple of things about this bill I think are important. This is not any sort of comment or decision concerning, from our perspective, concerning the Office of Administrative Hearings. This is simply a regulatory streamlining proposal to move contested cases that currently go to the Office of Administrative Hearings to an already established adjudicatory body for workers' compensation, which is the Workers' Compensation Board. There's probably approximately over the last couple of years about 200 of these cases a year. So that's not actually a very large load. It can be absorbed by the Workers' Compensation Board. We don't expect any additional costs from this. We actually expect some savings from this proposal. We think this will also decrease the complexity of the appeals process in workers' compensation. We've got in workers' compensation an already complex system. The appeals process is even more complex in terms of people understanding where they need to, which jurisdiction they need to file their appeals in. This would eliminate one jurisdiction and would make things simpler, less complex for attorneys, for injured workers, for employers, so that they know where to go with their appeals. We also think it's going to improve some time frames and move some things along, which we think is a good thing for the public. We don't think that anybody is served by sitting and waiting for results. We think it's a good idea to move things along. So we believe that the proposed changes will have a really positive impact for the workers' compensation system. We seek your support for this bill. As the committee administrator, Ms. Adkins, noted, there is one word in the bill as we were looking through this just this morning, that concerns us, the way it was drafted, and I'll take full responsibility because I was in Legislative Council's office when the drafting was being done, or at least being proposed on this, and it's just something that I probably missed and shouldn't have. On the original bill, it is on page 31, line 34, and it basically says the administrative law judge shall defer any action on the matter concerning a claim. And after discussion this morning, I realized that should say may, that should be a discretionary thing. And that was requested by the Workers' Compensation Board, and I do believe they're correct on that, sir. So my recommendation would be that we consider holding this over and allowing us to fix that piece of the bill or anything else that somebody raises that we think needs to be addressed. But, of course, that's completely at your discretion, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Don't see any. Answer them all. Bruce?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm from the Office of the State Court Administrator. The courts aren't taking a position on the bill. We had identified one small item in there that actually the Dash 1 amendments take care of, and that's the effective date. If you look in Section 19 of the original bill on page 37, line 45, it makes several of the amendments effective January 2, 2005, which would be retrospective. Should any of this come up to the Court of Appeals, that causes a bit of a problem for, which set of statutes was this supposed to go under. The Dash 1 amendments take care of that. They changed that date to 2006, and as long as those make it into the next set of amendments, then there's no problem.
Okay. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll pull this bill over to get the Dash 2 amendments sent.
Is that all we have to do? And over my head, I'll change.
Is there any discussion? No. Okay. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2091. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2405. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2405 was introduced by this committee, and I'm sure you spent a lot of time looking at it when you introduced it, but it would require aggravation claims for workers' compensation injuries to be signed by the worker's attending physician and delete the requirement that the worker sign the claim. I'm not going to go too much into what the original bill did. That was what the original bill did, but the amendments make changes to those things. And in the Dash 1 amendments, the requirement that the worker or the worker's representative sign the claim form is restored. And the amendments specify that the claim be processed by the insurer or a self-insured employer upon receipt, and specifies that the 14-day time limit for the first installment payment begin when an employer or paying agent receives a written report supported by medical evidence that verifies the worker's compensable work worsening. Mr. Chair, this deals with aggravation claims, and the agency is here to explain when those occur. And the Dash 1 amendments have been hand-engrossed. You have a copy of the Dash 1s as well as a hand-engrossment that shows you where the changes are made in the bill. And, Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Janet. This is Martin Alvey. Yeah. Martin Alvey, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Martin Alvey. I'm an attorney, and for the last almost 18 years, I've had the honor of representing injured workers in Oregon. I prepared written testimony for the committee, and like Mr. Schultz, I'm not going to read it to you, but what this bill does from our perspective is it detaches the requirement that an injured worker have both in an aggravation claim form and a medical report attached together at the same time in order to perfect an aggravation claim. And maybe a little history is in order to let the committee know how we got to where we are and what this bill is designed to fix. Years ago, before 1995, an injured worker could establish or perfect an aggravation claim by simply having a doctor have a medical report that indicated there was a worsening of that injured worker's condition. That led to some concern from the insurance companies because they could never divine from a medical report whether or not a worsening existed. Whereas the injured worker's attorney would say it was clear on its face, and litigation ensued. In 1995, as part of Senate Bill 369, a change was made that said that in order to provide a bright line, there needed to be an aggravation claim form, and that form was developed by the Workers' Compensation Division. And that form needed to be accompanied by a medical report that established a worsening of the injured worker's condition by objective medical evidence. Subsequently, that provision in Senate Bill 369 was interpreted to require an injured worker to have both the aggravation claim form and the medical report arrive at the same time on the insurer's desk in order for an aggravation claim to be perfected. Well, oftentimes what would happen in my practice is the aggravation claim form would be filled out by the doctor. The doctor would then dictate his chart note or his report verifying the aggravation claim, and the two might not arrive at the same time on the insurance company's desk. So the injured worker would wait, thinking they'd perfected an aggravation claim, and nothing would happen. So we would request a hearing and go before an administrative law judge. And oftentimes, the morning of the hearing, we would find out that it was the insurance company's perspective that the claim had not been perfected, and, which doesn't even get the ball rolling as far as the injured worker's aggravation claim was concerned. So from our perspective, what this bill does is decouples the aggravation claim form and the medical report and says that a properly completed aggravation claim form is the bright line. It's prima facie evidence under this bill to establish an aggravation claim and to start an insurance company's obligation to process the claim. This bill also says that an insurance company's obligation or a self-insured employer's obligation to commence paying time loss does not commence until they receive that medical report. So the aggravation claim will be perfected and the timeline will start rolling for the insurance company to either accept or deny that aggravation claim with the completed aggravation claim form. And time loss, the insurance company's obligation to come forward and start paying time loss does not start until they receive the medical report from the doctor establishing the worsened condition. We think this makes a lot of sense and would, I can, from my perspective and my experience, I could say probably hundreds of injured workers over the last years have had problems perfecting their aggravation claims, and we just think that this provision decoupling the aggravation claim form while at the same time providing the insurers with a bright line as to what constitutes an aggravation claim makes a lot of sense, and we urge the passage of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. Could I have Susan Laver and William Barrell? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm excuse me, Susan Lavier with City County Insurance Services. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm speaking on behalf of, I'm a senior claims examiner and the processing that we have to go through for these aggravation claims.
I'm William Bartell. I'm the claims manager for Special District Association of Oregon, and to keep our testimony somewhat brief, one of us will just give it.
Okay. Yes, I'd just like to explain that we initially get a claim in. Usually it's on a Form 801, which the worker fills out through the employer, or an 827 with the physician. And we get either one of those forms, and it's very clear that we do have a duty to act at that point. After those claims are closed and they're filed as an aggravation, it is correct that they are a little more unclear at this point because we do have to have the verifiable documentation to establish the worsening. We believe that this bill will be helpful. We are in support of it in clarifying that and clarifying for us when we have that duty to act. Because, again, the worker may feel like they have completed these forms for an aggravation, and but the information that we've received does not qualify them as an aggravation. So this would make it clear to us whether or not it is a true aggravation. At least we have a duty to act, either to accept or deny that aggravation. So we are in support of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony. Linda Barno. What about the dash ones?
Good morning. Linda Barno. I'm the legislative co-chair of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association, and I come before you today to put our support for 2405 and the dash one amendments as spoken before me. Any clarification we can get in the system for our injured workers to make sure what they think is happening is actually happening and we get the process rolling, we're all for, and so we are in support of 2405 and the dash ones.
And the dash ones. Okay. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you again. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2405? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2405 and open a work session on House Bill 2405. Representative Kitts.
Dash one's already moved in?
No.
Mr. Chair, I've moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 2405.
Representative Kitts moves dash ones to House Bill 2405. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, they're adopted. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2405 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2405 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Gelman. Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts. Aye.
Representative
Chalker.
Aye.
Representative
Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Vescovel.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carried. And I'd entertain a motion to put it on the consent calendar. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chairman, I would move 2405 as amended to the floor, be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2405 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Then it's on the consent calendar. Lost my. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2590. Janet, please.
Chair, House Bill 2590 will shift gears a bit. House Bill 2590 would allow the Landscape Architect Board to adopt their annual registration renewal dates by rule. It applies to landscape architects and to landscape architects in training. And it also deletes late fees for renewals that are received within 30 days of the given renewal date. Mr. Chair, just wanted to point out to people, the Landscape Architect Board is a separate board from the Landscape Contractors Board that we've had in several meetings related to landscaping. So this is a separate board, and they are one of the semi-independent agency boards. There is a dash two amendment that adds an emergency clause because the board would like this to take effect to be able to take effect on passage to be able to implement this year. And Mr. Chair, the bill was given a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. We've been in contact with Legislative Fiscal Office and with the agency that this does not affect the agency's budget. It was given a no fiscal impact, even with deletion of the late fees. And we have permission from the Speaker's Office if you would like to rescind the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Andy and Suzanne, go ahead.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, My name is Andy Leisner. I'm chairman of the Board of Landscape Architects. I'm a practicing landscape architect here in Salem, and my office is at 340 Leslie Street, Southeast Salem, Oregon, 97301. And we're here today to ask your endorsement for supporting the amendments to the current statute and encourage your passage. We're basically going from changing our housekeeping registration from statute to rules by the board. And our administrative assistant person here, Susanna Knight, can add and share a lot of the background on this too, because she's prepared a lot of this, but we're here to answer any questions too. So, Susanna.
Good morning. My name is Susanna Knight. I am currently serving as the administrator for the Landscape Architect Board. I think it's really important that you understand why we're here today, and I want to give you just a little bit of history, because I know that you get a lot of paperwork coming your way when the session starts. During the off session, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee convened to review numerous government models. There were 15 different agencies that were reviewed. Eight of those were semi-independent boards. The reason that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee chose to do this was because they were looking at combining two boards, the Board of Accountancy and the Tax Examiner Board. Well, Legislative Fiscal said, well, since we're looking at these two boards, why don't we expand the scope of our audit and take in the semi-independent boards who have been out there for a number of years and no one's ever looked at how that model of government is working. So, in the process of doing this audit, they reviewed eight of the semi-independent boards. The Landscape Architect Board was one of those boards that was reviewed. When the audit was released in October, numerous deficiencies were found with the Landscape Architect Board. Subsequent to that, the administrator resigned on November 30th. In mid-December, I became a contract administrator for the Landscape Architect Board. As I read and reviewed what Legislative Fiscal said was going on, I realized that a lot was happening that shouldn't have been happening. And I'd like to give you two examples. I just found one this morning as I grabbed what the former administrator was sending out to applicants. This is the administrative rules that she would send to them, and this is the revised statute that she would send to them. If you would open up the copy of this revised statute that the former administrator was sending to them, it shows that they renew annually in June. This is incorrect, because the statute right now says October.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kitts.
Do we have a copy of that document, or is that just...
This is just something that was on my shelf, and I just grabbed it as I came here.
Okay.
Just because in my brain I said, oh my word, given that she changed rules and never submitted them to the Secretary of State, I wonder if she ever changed a statute without coming to the legislature. So what I'm here to tell you today...
You can get copies of that.
...is that... My understanding of what's been going on is that an administrator was working for this board that really did not understand how government works. Okay? And Legislative Fiscal had this huge alarm that went off, and in the process, she got frightened and left. And then I came along and said, you guys are in a whole lot of trouble because things are not right. And so, I want you to know that on February 14th, I submitted reams of rules to the Secretary of State that the board had approved in 2002, that she had changed on the rules that she had in the office, that she was sending out to the whole world. But nothing was at the Secretary of State's office. So we went back and had hearings on all those rules again, because I contacted the rules department and they said, you probably ought to have another hearing on those, so we did. So we think we have all the rules where they need to be now. The second phase of this is trying to get other things that were done back into line. So that's why we're here today. It's sort of like a little confession that, wow, things needed straightening up. So
you're forgiven.
Representative Shoffer.
You know, I don't think you're the one that needs to be. Can we clone you and send you out into government all over the place and do your diligence? Because that's what we need to do. What you're doing is what needs to be done all over the place.
Oh, Chairman Brown and Representative Shoffler, I want to just say to you that when I sat in front of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, I said, point blank, administrators are in very powerful positions. They get all this information, and they can only share what they choose to share. And they can not share stuff that's really serious. And there was an audit done by this board. Semi-independent boards are audited every 2 years by the Secretary of State's office. When the audit was done last year, there was a preliminary letter that came from the auditors to this board, but it came to the administrator. And she chose not to send it to them because it said five really raspy things, like, things are, you have a lot of viruses in your computer, you have this, you have that, and the letter disappeared and they never saw it. In December, when I wasn't really hired yet, I went over to help them run their exam site, and I took along the audit report just to see what I could find in it. And when I started reading the audit report, it mentioned a preliminary letter. And I thought, well, I wonder what that letter was. And so I called the Secretary of State's office and got a copy of it, and that's where I discovered all these things that they had told the board that the board never heard about. So unfortunately, the administrator that they had hired wasn't doing the job well at all. So now we're here to ask you your help so that we can try to get this fixed. And the best thing for the board right now is for you to allow the renewal date to be placed into rule. And then when you allow that, we're going to make it on annually on the date of their initial registration date. Now, if you ask me about that, I would tell you that last week I had a call from a registrant who wanted information to go to the state of Washington so that he can get registered there. And when I went back through his file, all the way back to the first document, I saw a letter in there, and it was dated 1989. And at that time, Eleanor Gundren was the administrator of the board. And it appears to me that the original statute did have renewals on the month of your initial registration. The administrator at that time made a decision, probably with the board, that they should put them all lumped together at one time in the month of October, and a statute change was made. I have a personal philosophy about workload in offices. I've been administrating the Board of Geologist Examiners by myself for the last 6 years, and we renew on the original month of your registration. I can do all the work for this board because the workload is spread out throughout the year. Every month I do some. If I had all 1,200 in one month, I would have to hire about 10 temps to come in to help me do all that work, where by doing it every month, I can do it all by myself, and I'm the only staff. So at the time that this statute change was made in 89, Eleanor was administrating both the architect board and the landscape architect board together. So probably it was more convenient for her and the workload at that time to move all those into one spot because she had a staff of two people and they could do that. But right now I'm a staff of one and now I'm helping them. So I've been working long hours and I'm looking forward to having someone help me. And right now I'm just trying to get them straighten around, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chair, more of a comment than anything. I think this is an example of an administrator taking streamlining to the to the next level, actually erasing and changing legislative statutes on their own account. So it's Representative Shoffler whispered to me an interesting comment. He said, it "Makes you wonder what else is going on out there, doesn't it?" So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffer.
We're here to help you.
Thank you.
That scare you?
We're from the government.
Sure, that, we couldn't resist it.
Forgive me.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, we feel very delighted to have Susanna with us because she's actually, because we are appointed by the governor and we are business people and we're trying to run a good board, she's got us on track. And we've got little delegated projects we're doing that we didn't have before. So we're not just kind of like punching our time card every 4 months or so when we have board meetings, try to get in, do our work, and we're out. We actually have other little projects that we've all been delegated to, and I think it's good because it's making us more accountable. And thanks to Susanna. So she's a crackerjack. So. But we do appreciate your listening to us and helping us out.
If I could just, Senator Brown, or Representative Brown, if I could just interject one more comment, and that is that, you know, there's a lot of honor with being an administrator, and that is you have to, the board has to assume that you do what they approve at the minutes and that the follow-up is done. And to go out on the internet and check rules and laws to see if things were done appropriately is not necessarily something that they might take time to do. Because of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee review, the semi-independent board administrators have put together a committee to set up a process for best practices so that when board members come on, they can know what they need to watch for because they just don't know what they need to watch for. And so until they know, they can't be doing it. And for example, every month my board chair for the geology board sees the bank statement, looks through it, signs off on it. Every board meeting, I take a roster of all the checks that have been written so they can see how the money's been spent. And every board meeting, I take a revenue and expense statement so they can see if we're still in the black or not. And this is the kind of information that this board just never saw, but, you know, they never asked to see it, but that's the kind of thing we have to train them to know that they have a right to see. And so they're just, we're learning a lot from this, and I think a lot of credit needs to be given to Adrienne Sexton from the Legislative Fiscal Office who did this review, and she spent a lot of time sitting in our different board offices getting out all kinds of information and going on the internet and researching, and she just did buckets of work, and she was not happy with the Landscape Architect Board at all.
Representative Esco.
Well, I just want to say that you're a very, very breath of fresh air in government. Not only are you getting a handle on what you're doing, but you're making your board perform more so. And I think that's very important. And I applaud you for what you're doing. Now, I would assume that probably the former administrator wouldn't want to use you as a job reference, though. That's a joke.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for testifying this morning.
Thank you very much.
Let's see, we're in a work session, huh?
No.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2590. Representative Esquivel.
On 2590, I only have 2590-2 amendment. I do not have a -1. Is there a -1 amendment that I have misfiled or something?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any other amendments. Sometimes someone requests amendment and never brings it forward. We don't have a way of knowing that. Legislative Council might have made a mistake with one and issued it as a -2. So this is the amendment we requested for the board.
I'll move to adopt the -2 if you'd like.
Okay. Representative Esquivel moves we adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2590. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So that, see, we have to remove the referral tonight. Yeah. The chair would entertain a motion to remove the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we remove the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on House Bill 2590-2.
Representative Kitts moves we remove the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on House Bill 2590 as amended. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Now, motion to the floor. Representative Mescal.
I move that we move 2590 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mescal moves House Bill 2590 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing none, Katie, we call the roll.
Katie Hardador.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Shockler.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Graham.
Aye. That consent calendar, huh?
Actually, I'd like to carry the bill. I think it's a good opportunity to just speak to the body about the good work that it's being done and not let it just, you know, bring it to light. I think it would be a good opportunity.
Representative Kitts will carry the bill on the floor then.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, and just to highlight what the administrator said is that Adrian Sexton in our legislative fiscal office right down the hall was very instrumental in a lot of the oversight of the small boards, so all last interims.
Mr. Chair, I would ask the testifiers if there are any people in particular other than Adrian that you'd like mentioned as a result of this final product. Please email those names to me with a brief summary of what exactly they did, and we'd like to give everybody credit that deserves credit on this hard work.
Thank you, Representative. I would entertain a motion to waive the rules to allow Representative Kitts to vote on House Bill 2160.
I'll make the motion.
Representative Esquivel moves that Representative Kitts, the rules be waived to allow Representative Kitts to vote on 2160. Is there any objection? Seeing none, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Kitts votes aye. Is there anything else, Janet?
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, we won't be here Friday morning up in Portland at 9 o'clock. You have the directions. Everyone have
everybody
the directions.
Directions.
We're not arranging transportation, but if any of you want to drive together, that would be okay.
You're on your own to make the arrangements.
And we'll have excused absences from floor.
Yes. We've already taken care of that. We're not doing any lunch together, so if you want to do lunch together afterwards, they're going to have coffee and things for us when we get there. Tour's going to be pretty interesting, and we are hearing one bill, the e-permitting bill, House Bill 3097. And Monday's agenda may be pretty full, so check the time closely in case it says 8 o'clock instead of 8:30, but that hasn't been decided yet. So. It wasn't my idea.
You'll avoid the traffic.
Get a rope.
Where are we having it at?
It's if Take 205, it's Airport Way, but you go east on Airport Way instead of towards the airport.
At IBW?
Uh-huh.
That's where the hearing's going to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Your
brotherhood.
Same place.
Right on, brother.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we do all the controversial bills at 8 in the morning.
8 in the morning?
Mr. Chair, I would recommend if you need a fourth vote that you wait.
Minimum wage at 6 a.m.
One more thing. Mr. Chair, the amendments to the public contracting bill came out afternoon. The bill that's in the Senate General Government Committee is having a work session with the amendments tomorrow afternoon. So if anyone wants a copy, just let me know. They're exactly what they told us they would be. So if anyone wants a copy.
Okay.
Exactly what they said they'd be?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. We're adjourned.